Welcome to the Entrepreneur's Lounge radio show, where we expose the myths of entrepreneurship and release the weight of it all. Real people, real issues, and real talk with expert solutions. So sit back, relax, and enjoy the show as we welcome our host, Alicia Brown, the Joy Guru.
All right, all right. Well, welcome one and welcome all. This is Alicia Brown, the Joy Guru. As the CEO of Fruition Publishing Concierge Service, I want to share with you publishing and media secrets that you need to know for ultimate success. Writing and publishing is a business. It's a very lucrative one, but many authors find themselves at the short end of that stick. So as one of the authors who's used this to not only be a successful published author, but managed to turn that into an award-winning entrepreneur, publisher, magazine celebrity interviewer, and managing editor, among other things, I work every day to take our clients from a book idea to a profitable brand and business. And it does not happen by osmosis. But if you're willing to work hard, and willing to do what it takes to make it work versus just throwing spaghetti at the wall and hoping something that sticks, you will be successful. So that's a little bit of who I am. So if you have not connected with me and you're on not on my email list, please do so. You can go to thejoyguru.net and sign up to be on my email list. You can also sign up on that email list so you can be in my private Facebook group. We have the Authors Academy courtesy of Fruition Publishing Concierge Services. So now that we're finished with all that information and the housekeeping rules, I want to introduce our special guest for this discussion of From a Book Idea to Global Movement. So I'm so pleased to be here tonight with Mrs. Saudia White, the amazing Amazon. Welcome, Saudia. Please tell the people who you are.
Thank you, Alicia Brown, for having me on. I appreciate the platform. And as she stated, I'm Saudia White, better known as the amazing Amazon. I'm also the CEO, founder, and visionary of Eyes Wide Open, Empowering People Globally, as well as Generational Survivors, the Global Movement. And I think that's what we're here to talk about today.
Absolutely. Global movement. You guys heard her.
Yes. So Eyes Wide Open. Let me just tell you a little
bit. Please do.
Eyes Wide Open was, I founded that in 2017, October 2017. And that actually didn't come first. And it's funny because I came from a law enforcement background.
Mm-hmm.
And I had no idea that I was going into entrepreneurship, Alicia.
Right.
I actually saw myself as becoming the chief of the department, which I told my chief that, Williamsburg. I started off in NYPD. I retired from Williamsburg, Virginia's police department. And I retired early. I had a disability retirement, which led me to say, what am I going to do now? That law enforcement was my life. I didn't know what I was going to do. I had no backup. I had no backup plan.
Okay.
So when you have no backup plan and there were things that happened along the way, I started saying, well, let me go back to school. And you know what? When I went back to school, I took up some business courses.
Okay.
In the midst of all that, I was taught how to, from a good friend of mine, how to make soaps and shea butters.
Okay.
And I started doing so well with that, Alicia, that people were buying my product and they were saying, hey, do you have a storefront? Where can I get this? And I was like, I don't have a storefront. But you know what? I'm in college. I'm taking business courses and maybe I need to look and explore that. So okay. I did. I got my LLC for the first business and it was the Soapologist, right? Moving further along from that, I said, I want to do more. I want to do more with this, this business. I love this entrepreneurship, and God downloaded into me a vision, Eyes Wide Open, Empowering People Globally. That's what came to me. And I was in a hospital bed when it came to me.
Wow.
And I had a lot of different challenges going on at that time. So when that vision came to me, I thought of it as a I'm going to be this philanthropist. I'm going to pour into other nonprofits. And in the beginning, it started off just like that, where I found, you know, nonprofits sought me out. And one in particular, which we did have a fundraiser for.
Okay.
And we did raise a couple of thousands of dollars for her, a couple of hundreds of dollars for her, I'm sorry. And we were able to put on this big function, which actually hit national news. So that was awesome as well. But that was our first big experience with Eyes Wide Open and pouring back into another nonprofit. But Alicia, as you know, with business, if you don't have money, there's no source of money, no source of income, how do you continue to fund these awesome and amazing projects? Yes, I wanted to be this big time philanthropist and we wanted to give back. We did countless events for the community, you know, human trafficking events, different things like that. But still, there was something missing. There was a missing piece. It was like, okay, we didn't think this out properly. So we had to stop, right?
Right.
We took a pause. And it's okay. In business, sometimes you have to take a pause to begin again, to really see the full picture. In the midst of that pause, there was another vision, generational survivors. And what was a generational survivor? It came to me.
Okay.
I don't want to know where I was when that vision came to me. I was back in the hospital.
Oh, wow.
So, exactly. So, generational survivors came to me because I was a product of child molestation. I was also a product of rape. And I also witnessed my mother being abused at a very young age, which her abuser turned on me. So I knew from talking with my mother that she also was a product of sexual assault and molestation. And for me, I said to myself, okay, well, she survived that, but look, I'm going through it now as well. This is going down from one generation to another. Because
right.
Her mother was also a product of domestic violence and, you know, molestation, rape. So it was like generational survivors. That's something that came to me and I said, you know what? I want to expound on this. I see this being bigger than what I even see before me. I can see this down the road being something global, you know, that in every country, there are generational survivors, you know, bringing me to this very moment, bringing me here today where I have met hundreds of women from all over and men. Not just women, but men who are generational survivors who grew up in a home witnessing domestic violence and or was a product of that domestic violence, either through child molestation, sexual assault. And they have continued to grow through that. And that experience might have been passed down to their children or might not have, because most survivors tend to end up in relationships that are abusive. So that was the vision behind generational survivor. Let's get this community going and let's expound on this on a global level. And let's get these resources out there. Let's talk to other generational survivors out there. And let's think of the language in. Let's think of how we can change the laws on how, because when you are molested at a young age, oftentimes, the person that's molesting doesn't tell until they're way in their adulthood, maybe their 40s, 50s, and sometimes not even then.
Right.
Right. So what happens to the predator? The predator never pays for what he's done or she has done. They continue to do the same thing over and over and over again until they are really caught red-handed. And oftentimes, they're not. So unless we have survivors that are speaking out and letting their voices be heard, there's not very much penalty going towards these molesters, these abusers. So generational survivors was a way also to let our voices be heard, to come out of our shell, to stand up to what has happened to us, not allowing our past define our future. and dictate what we have going on. And I found it to be very freeing when I started to share my story, to share my testimony, right?
Mm-hmm.
My mess became my message. And it opened up the doorway for other women such as myself and men that are generational survivors who also want to tell their stories. Hence came the first book. But before the book, right, there was something in play. There was something there. Out of the book, that just expanded the business card. So generational survivors was the beginning. And then we had the book.
Right.
We had the anthology. We had the anthology.
So I want to stop you right there. Some people came in a little bit later. I'm going to do a short, quick recap. So we heard from the beginning that, okay, you were a police officer. You retired on a medical disability.
Correct.
You had an epiphany basically while you were in the hospital another time. And the idea, you know, you had your business, you had empowering people globally, you decided to go back to school, and the idea of generational survivors came to you. So you had the idea before you had the book. The book was birthed out of the idea, and it sounds like your heart as wanting to do philanthropy work. And it also sounds like from your experience of what you've been through, you wanted to share your testimony. So
absolutely,
with all of this, you came up with Generational Survivors, the concept. You birthed the book where you did an anthology with other people in it as well on this topic. So all of that sounds great. And I'm sure our listeners tonight, those that will have this replay later from my private group, I'm sure they're thinking, you know, some of them had a book first and they're looking to expand to a movement. Some of them may have had the concept of a movement first and they birthed a book no matter which way they went. Okay, here's where you are. Now, what were some parts of the journey as far as this book? Because, you know, one of the things that I'm insane about are contracts and the legal part, the business part of being an author. So I want you, I know your story, but our listeners don't. I want you to tell us just from the book perspective, in developing this as a brand, what were some of the things, what was some part of your journey, and what were some of the things, the lessons that you learned that if you were advising someone to do it, you would tell them that they need to pay special attention to?
Oh, wow. You want to get into the...
I know that could be like a 4 or 5 session clubhouse event. But if you could give us some skinny.
That's a lot. Let me tell you something. And for those of you who are here, I just want to say it wasn't a pretty picture.
No.
So let me start there. Okay. So, okay, where do I begin? I started out with... like she said, eyes wide open, empowering people globally. Got into a relationship with a publisher, and I'm sending air quotes up. So read between the lines. She was my publisher, and that publisher, with that, we didn't have a big contract. What we had was something thrown together, and I was not wise. I want you to pay attention to this. There was a contract put together, and she quoted me a price. The price was very mediocre for the things that she was telling me she could do. So I said, wow, she must be really good if she could do all of this with such little funding. And she managed to get a lot of things done, but I didn't realize that there were some things going on behind the scene. So pay attention to when people come to you and tell you that they could do all of these grandiose things, but yet their pricing is very meager. You may feel like, oh, this is awesome. I'm going to get so much done. But you want to ask yourself, really, is this really legit? And how is he or she able to do this with such mediocre funding? Okay. That's number one. That's clue number one, that something is not right. But I was not knowledgeable. I was a rookie to this whole publishing thing. First of all, I had no knowledge about what a publisher could do. So I took that individual at face value. And what she told me, I believed, because I said, oh, wow, I'm getting ready to get this book. And they also told me that I should do an anthology. Okay. Because I didn't know anything about an anthology. I'll just let you all know. I had no idea, had never heard of an anthology. I was thinking about a book, just a regular old book. And this individual, this publisher, air quotes, stated I should do an anthology. And I said, okay, well, what is it? And when they explained it to me, it sounded so grandiose. Oh, you're the compiler. You get all these different women to come onto your platform, and they share their story. They're a part of the book. They pay you to be in the book. You know, we do this big time marketing. You're on radio. You're on you're in magazines. You're here. You're there. So it was to me, I had never done anything like that. So pay attention. I entered in seeing such a huge, like, you know, all of this fantasy. It was like, oh my gosh, I'm going to be this big time star. She's going to have me on television. I'm going to be speaking over here because I love to speak. So I'm looking at the big picture of what she's saying, and I'm believing it because so far she has come in and she has delivered. And I went with it. So we interviewed without contracts in the beginning. We did not have, we had a contract, but I didn't get it looked at by a lawyer. And if I would have done that in the beginning, perhaps it would have stopped me from making further decisions or paying into her more than what I did. And I did not do that. I didn't do my due diligence. Do your due diligence when you get your contracts. I know sometimes people say, oh, you know, this is very basic. And sometimes very basic could be just that. It could be very basic, and it still doesn't cover you. So understand that just because it's a basic contract does not mean that it's going to cover everything that you may need. There is so much to publishing. Trust and believe me when I tell you, I did not know what I was getting myself into. And that is the reason why when you do not know, you may have to spend the extra dollars, the extra coins to go ahead and get someone from a legal aspect to let you know, like, hey, this isn't right. No, no, no. This contract doesn't look good. And it's funny because I will tell y'all this. I did get an individual to look at the contract, but he was not a contract lawyer. He was just good with dealing with contracts. And the funny thing is he did tell me, like, something seems a little off. You may want to seek legal advice. I did not listen. I went against that because the lines become a little gray. I became really close friends with this individual, and I allowed the personal to overshine the business. So I stopped looking at the business and started looking at how, well, I can trust her. We don't really need to talk about a contract for this because I already have a contract for that. So, and Alicia knows a lot more of the story. I don't want to go too much into detail behind the scene, but I will tell you in the beginning, everything looked like a diamond. It was shining so brightly. We were going on these tours, these book tours, speaking at different venues, on different radio stations, in different magazines, everything that, you know, I had to pull out money for sometimes, but other times I did not. So I guess that's why I really didn't question a lot of it, because with whatever I was paying her on that monthly basis, it seemed like to me she was making it happen. So I did not question a lot, which, big mistake. Always know what the person who you are, who's handling your money, or handling your business, should I say, not your money, but handling your business, which is your money, you want to know what they're doing. And I really didn't know what she was doing. I didn't know that you know, she was robbing Peter to pay Paul, because had I would have known that, I would have terminated her immediately. There was a lot of things going on behind the scene that I wasn't privy of. So you want to know what your so-called, you want to know what a publisher does. That's number one. You want to have your contract set out. That's number two. You want to make sure that you get legal advice. That's number three. And you want to understand from both aspects what you're supposed to receive, because as the visionary, I signed a contract that basically stated that my co-authors will be able to get royalties from me and my book sales for the rest of their lives. And I had no idea. I had no idea until a real publisher came in as an editor to edit the book, because she hired an editor to come in and edit the book. And that editor was Miss Alicia Brown. And when she came in, yes, when Miss Brown came in, she first of all looked at the project as a whole. And, you know, I think in the beginning she didn't say much, but then towards the ending, she started to tell me, like, this is incorrect. You need to fix some of the things over here. And, you know, she just shined some more light on my situation, basically giving me a lot more information than I had had. And once I realized, like, wow, this is wrong, I didn't realize that. I thought that I was covered in this area. And Ms. Brown pointed out that, no, you are not covered. And as a visionary, you should never have been made to do so much of everything. Like, that's not your job. You are the visionary. And if they're going to make money, it's because they have to basically go out and promote on their own. But I was told that I had to promote the whole group. And that should not have been. As a visionary, you know, the visionary should have one goal, and that's to envision the project moving forward, and to also understand that even if your co-authors don't make money, you're not responsible for that. You're responsible for the vision to continue growing and moving forward. You're not responsible for the marketing and promotions of your co-authors. You're responsible for your marketing of the project itself. And the co-authors are also supposed to enhance that vision. They're supposed to enhance that project. So moving forward, there were a lot of things that Ms. Brown had to come in and undo, because the so-called publisher, she hadn't done anything at all. First of all, my book wasn't copyrighted, right? Ms. Brown, it wasn't copyrighted. Right. It was not formatted the right way. It wasn't formatted to go into bookstores. It wasn't formatted to go into the Library of Congress. She had no knowledge. She had no way of knowing how to do that, because she was not a real publisher. She knew how to self-publish. So I would tell you all listening that, know who your publisher is and know what their capabilities are. Understand the difference between self-publishing, traditional publishing, publishing. I mean, there's a lot of different forms, hybrid publishing. Understand the differences there, right? And know going in what you want and what you expect. I didn't know what to expect. I didn't know what I wanted going in, because I didn't understand publishing. I should have done more research. And I think even with that, I might not still have understood, you know, but when you have a person quoting you such a low price, be wary of that. Don't always go for the low ball. And also be wary of those who are quoting, you know, too much of a high price. I mean, there are some people who are quoting thousands and thousands and thousands and thousands of dollars, and they're doing nothing. So you have to find that happy medium. You have to do your due diligence, get the legal aspect on board. Know that it's okay to consult with an attorney. It's not about feelings here. This is about business.
I want to interject right there as we're going to expand to the global movement part, because this is very important. Being an author, I say this just all the time. I don't think it's one of those things I'm never going to stop saying. It's a business. I don't care if you self-publish. I don't care if you go with the publisher. I don't care how you look at it. It is a business. From the time you go from concept to pen to paper or keys on the keyboard, it becomes a business.
Absolutely.
And business is not something you play with. I also don't want listeners to feel like, well, dang, if I got to do all of that, well, I'm not the publisher. If I was a publisher, I may know all of that. You may not be a publisher, but you're a business owner. And remember, a visionary is the person with the vision, but just like a good CEO, they know how to ask the questions. They're not trying to know and do everything because no one person can know and do everything. There are certain things in life we can do by ourselves, but writing a book should never be one of them, even if you're self-publishing. So no, we're not saying that you need to know all of everything yourself and you need to study for 15 years before you trust anyone or bring anyone to help you with anything. That's not what we're saying. But what we're saying is that being an author is part of business, and anything that's part business has legalities to it. So there are, you know, some errors that people really make when it comes to writing and when it comes to being a published author, and it's very serious. Now, in Saudia's case, it was an anthology. That heightens the severity of it because when you bring other people on board to be a part of a writing project, there are certain legal things that need to be in place. So it's not just the publishing contract between you and the publisher as a visionary. There are certain documents that a reputable publisher knows we have to have for other people that are involved as co-authors. And then from that point, if a publisher knows the industry, if they're a reputable publisher, we also know certain things you can't do in a book. There's licensing, there's trademark infringement, there's this, there's that. You just can't do it. It's a cool idea. You may see it done, but it's actually placing you in a legal landmine. And that's the part of being an author that's so important. I want anyone to know that ever comes in contact with me, whether we publish with you or work with you or not, it's the fact that there are so many legalities that if you do not do this right, if you do not understand, even if you pay good money and this person is highly sought after as a publisher or consultant or whatever capacity they work with you, there are certain legalities that you will be responsible for. And if you're not structured properly as a business, it can wipe out your personal finances. And that's the part that bothers me, is authors that don't even recoup the investment they made, authors that don't get that message out to the people that should hear it, because the whole point you're writing is to have an impact, is to have a transformation. You're not just writing for the sake of writing. You may love it, but you're writing to make a difference to someone, whether you're someone is 10 people or you're someone is a hopeful 1 million. You're writing to make a difference, to transform, to entertain. So this isn't something you're playing with. And the last thing you want to do is have a simple error you didn't know, or you hired somebody that wasn't reputable, or maybe they just didn't care. They just want your money. They put you where now you have legal issues for what you didn't know. And now that not only shuts down your business, ruins your reputation, but it can actually attack your personal finances with lawsuits and fines and all of these things. And especially if you're doing something like an anthology, you have multiple people that can sue you for certain things. If you don't have those contracts right, and again, I didn't know, I was depending on this. Well, there is a thing, at least in the US, that ignorance is no excuse of the law. So I would hate for you to find out by being slapped with the 5, 6, 7, 8 figure lawsuit. So it's a business. You want to talk about that, Saudia?
Wow. Yes. So this is the closeout. So this was the fallout to the anthology. So while we were able to get a published book. I was able to get my book due to Ms. Brown stepping in and taking over because the previous publisher wanted to step down and walk away from the project. So that almost left me burdened with no publisher and no way of moving forward with the project. So I can tell you that was quite stunned. So we had a lawsuit issue pending. The woman on the book wanted to sue me. But as soon as Ms. Brown stepped in and the legal jargon, and she doesn't play, which is good because I needed someone who understood the contracts and had a legit contract to really help sort out the mess from the previous publisher. Alicia, if you want to step in and talk about what you had to do because of, you know, the previous contract. That's why I say that we talk about business, we have to really understand the contract.
Yeah.
From a business.
Because it say this was from a book to a global movement. If you're having a global, oh my God, yes. One of the things I want to say, if you're having a global movement, or even if you're not trying for global, but you know, I don't want to play small. I want to make a business out of this. Some of you, let's just be honest, you want to be very profitable. Like you're saying, no, I have a goal of making this much money and I want that. I want to be on TV. Some people are like, well, I don't need all of that. I just want to make an impact. So if I can just speak on the topic or in my local community, any of that, all of that's fine. I just, you know, I'm not trying to be the big superstar, but I want to make an impact. I don't want my book to just sit on the shelf. However big or small your vision is, that's fine. But you have to know that in order to have something like that, I told you having a book is a business. So what comes when it comes to things like business? I'm going to use Saudi as generational survivors as an example. Well, first of all, it's a trademark brand. And people confuse, authors all the time will confuse the difference between copyright and trademark. You can copyright the contents of your book. All you're copywriting are the words and things inside of your book. Now, you think of Coca-Cola. That name Coca-Cola is trademarked. The logo is trademarked, the image, because they want, every time you see their logo, you associate that with Coca-Cola and no one else but their company. I can't come out with a cola tomorrow and grab their logo and put it on it. So you associate their brand with mine and you buy mine and I'm not Coca-Cola. So there's several different things that need to be trademarked when you talk about a brand. So Saudia has trademarked generational survivors. Now, disclaimer, I'm not a trademark attorney. However, for some of you, that's going to be something you need to look into. And even if you're not, before you write the book, because trademarks have their stipulations of what needs to be active and things they need to see too. But it's something you need to look into. You may have a certain phrase or business name or things you're branding. And let me just help you out here. Making it an LLC does not trademark protect it. The protection that a trademark offers is not the same protection if you take that name and call it LLC, or you take that name and you incorporate it. Any form of incorporation does not offer you trademark protection. They're not one and the same. See, these are the things we have to think about when we have a book and we're talking about we want to have a global movement. But to be honest with you, these are the things you need to think about if you're making a business out of the book, which if you are an author, it is a business. So certain things like copyrights are no given. And I always say this in multiple episodes when we get on this topic, listen, there's no such thing legally as a poor man copyright. I know it's one of those things that people believe is, you know, old wives' tale that they pass around, but it's not true. You can print out a copy of your book, of your manuscript. You can handwrite it, print it, copy it, mail it to yourself with the stamp. And then they say you never open it. And that's the official copyright. Others will tell you, well, according to the law, it's copyright the minute you put it on paper. What I'm trying to tell you is this. The poor man's copyright, when you mail it to yourself, that's not a legal thing. It's not a legal thing. So don't use that as a cheap way to do it, because it's not, it has no legal backing. Second, the other issue when people are like, well, why would I spend the money and I'm trying to save money? Why would I go to copyright.gov, which is where you should go when you want to copyright something? There's other services that offer you copyright, but the legal entity to go to would be copyright.gov, which is associated with the Library of Congress. Why would I want to spend the money? Because just like with contracts, we can do a handshake. But if we ever have to go to court, what is written is what is proven. That's what we agreed upon. It's in black and white. And unless we have like an addendum or something to it, that last contract is what the court will enforce. So then it's very clear the terms we agreed on. And if either one of us is in violation, what is the remedy? So again, people do business all the time on a handshake, and you don't have a problem until you have a problem. So when you have a problem, well, you know, well, she said, well, no, she didn't. He said, well, no, he didn't. That's why you need a contract on paper. So when we're talking about that part of it, that's why it's important. Like I said, again, generational survivors is a trademark brand. What does that mean? No one else can use the term generational survivors and have an event that's called that, or do this. Because remember, when it comes to your book titles, there are several different books that have the same book title. That's not unusual. But the trademark brand, you can't make up events under my trademark brand. You can't do many things. There's many legal protections when it's a trademark brand. So especially if you're looking to have a major impact, you're looking to have a global movement, a national movement, whatever level, you need to know the business side, and trademarks is very important. If you have people that are doing contributions to your book, there are legal documents there as well, because you can't just have people write things and say great things about you. Maybe they do a forward in your book, whatever. There should be release, at least one release that they sign. Because, you know, people agree to do things and then people get in their ear, they have a change of heart, or they see you doing well, I should make more money, or I said free, I should charge. And now you have people that want to send you to court, and God forbid they win and you're told you have to take that out of your book. You can not only, of course, you know, it's going to take money and different processes to take something out of the book and redistribute it, whatever. But a lot of these court fines require you to take every copy that exists off the shelf, and then they will fine you for any proceeds you've made and have a portion of that go to the person. It was much easier for you to just get things written, to get contracts signed, to get releases signed, and just avoid the problem. People, it doesn't prevent them from suing you. Anyone can spend the money to sue you. But if you have something written that has the clear terms and what you said was the issue or what the remedy was, if they violated those terms, you would have a much better time in court than if not. So we have to, as authors, you know, that's one of the biggest publishing secrets, media secrets, secrets for your success as an author and writer. Treat this like a business. And I'm going to say this is one of the things, if you treat something like a business, you have a financial goal. Because if you just want to do something for fun, or you want to do something to make an impact, and that's all, profits really don't matter for that, then you can just do what you want to do. You can do it how you want to do. You can take your time with it. But a business has financial goals, and they have those weekly, and they have those sometimes daily. They have those monthly. They have those annually. They have those quarterly. Businesses think in quarters and years, in addition to those other time frames I just said. So as an author, that's one of the things I ask a lot of my clients. What's your financial goal? What's your plan? Other than the book, what else are you doing? Because this is a business. You do have to work it. There's no one little snap or one business, one company you're going to work with, or one little thing that's going to be the magic lever. And if you find it, you're going to have to keep hitting that lever. It's not one and done. It's never one and done. So it becomes a business. And I'm honest with people. Some people, when we really sit down and we talk about it, and I see their lack of commitment, what they really don't want to do, or sometimes it's just the unrealistic viewpoint they have of, I want all this, but I don't want to do anything. I'll just let you know I'm not the publisher for you. Because I already know somebody's looking for that person and will promise them the world and take their money. And they know they're not going to be successful because they can already tell this person doesn't want to do anything. They think they can just pay this and everything is done for them. So yeah, let's go ahead and get that money real quick. But we already know this one's going to be a dud. And there are some publishers that operate that way, because all they want is your money. And after they do the book, they don't care. If you don't have book sales, they don't care, because they've already went on to the next several dozens or hundreds of other people. So you have to really look at this like a business. And definitely, if you want a global movement, definitely have to know the business side. Be thinking bigger than just the book. Think about, this as a brand. Do I need to be trademarked, copyright? If you have some things you've invented, products and things, does there need to be a patent? How much is that going to cost? Because one of the things I always teach our clients is it's more than just a book. So you really need to sit down and have a strategy, including a financial strategy. And if you're sitting down, have a strategy, and you know there's several different pieces to this, then what are those pieces? Well, if you know what the different pieces are, you're thinking about how much does that cost? And more importantly, not only how much does that cost, but what timeline, what time frame does it matter? Because you don't do everything all at once. And there has to be a certain profitability as well for it to make sense. There has to be a certain level of introduction to the public that you're saying that would benefit from these things and actually want those things. So when do you implement what? Remember I said at the beginning, we don't just throw spaghetti at the wall hoping something will stick. So what do you need with the book? What do you need besides the book? What's the overall plan? We heard about Saadia talking about empowering people globally. We heard about her vision with generational survivors. And if you were here from the beginning, you would have heard that wasn't just about a book. It was more than a book. So it had to be a certain strategy in how the business is established, what is done. What's the hook going to be with not just a book, but what things as do them as a corporation plan to do, and how will they execute those? Who do they need to execute those? And like in her case, if all things fail at any part of this particular project or this particular time frame, who do I have to bring in? How do we remedy that? That's how businesses think. People who think I'm just going to put something together, oh, it's going to be pretty and I know it's just going to do well. You didn't think this thing out. So you have issues, you have problems. And then you have to remember too, I'm going to turn it back to Saadia as we close out. You have to remember too, if you're the CEO, be mindful of who you bring on as the Indians. You know, there's the chief and Indians, because I'm the chief. But when we got a bunch of Indians that think they're chiefs, that's when we also have problems. So who are you bringing on? How committed are they to whatever position you put them in to work on this vision? And do they have the same vision and mission in mind? Because if there are two different visions, there's division. And that's how things start to fall apart. In a company, there's only one CEO. There's other leadership positions. There's other executive positions. There's different hierarchy, but there's only one CEO. And at any time, if they're not, people here are not committed to the vision of this company, the mission, our core values, the way we intend to do things and the things we're doing, then this is not the job for them. And it's the same thing with your book. And I'm going to say this one last thing. I'm always emphasizing with publishing, whether it's a publishing consultant, your editor, your book illustrator, but definitely if you're going with a publisher, this is a collaborative partnership. So you've got to, as Saadia has emphasized, make sure you have someone that understands your vision. They're committed to you and your vision, and they're here to partner with you. So the same things like Saadia advised, you know, it's nothing wrong with you having a lawyer or seeking the lawyer when you're given those things. I assure you, if they're a reputable person, they're not offended because it's business. If they're not reputable, that's when they try to pull the friend switch. Well, you know, you can trust me, blah, 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 blah. Yeah, I can't trust you. But here's the line. If you are friends or you really respect that person, here's the line of my respect for you. And here's the other side where I'm a business owner. I have to make sure I know how I wear both hats and I don't let one hat blind my vision for what I really need to be looking for. And I want to say people make mistakes. You make mistakes in this. You live and you learn. But one thing I know when it comes to books and publishing, most things can be remedied. Even if you don't launch when you want to, or, you know, it didn't look quite the way you want to do, there's always second editions. Most things can be remedied. But my hope is that you always have it remedied where you don't go broke or bankrupt or the vision doesn't die. Because that's costly. Where you know, so much is going on that legally it's exhausting, financially it's exhausting. And it's just, you know, sometimes you feel like it's more trouble than it's worth. And I've seen people who have spent tens of thousands in publishing contracts. And then they're just like, you know what, all the hoopla, all the legal stuff, it just isn't worth it. So I just wrote the money off, walked away from that, and I had to start something else over here. And they had success, the next book, whatever they were doing, but what a loss from what your initial vision was, to have to walk away from something you created because the wrong people are on board with the wrong thing. So if you don't listen to anything we said tonight, especially in making this a global movement, just know that there's a business side to being an author. No matter how small or how big your vision is for what you want to do for your book and your book platform. And that is the side you need to know. Not trying to do a 15, 20 year plan. No one's asking you to go to publishing school so you can be a publisher. If that's what you want to do, fine. But just knowing that you do have to have some vested interest in this. You do have to do your due diligence. And you need to understand that you need to be in this for the long haul. Books are not one and done. It's the real work always starts after that book is published. And you have to be committed to your vision because why? It was given to you. Everyone else you partner with is helping you facilitate that vision or should be, but the vision belongs to you. The business belongs to you. Your book is your intellectual property. Let no one steal that and let no one stop you from actually achieving the mission. And that is an everyday thing you do in addition to your regular life. I'm going to turn it back to you, Saadia. What would you leave the audience with today? If you can say anything, you know, somebody out there, maybe they already published a book or they're just starting the book publishing process and they know they have this bigger vision that they think the book is perfect for. Is there anything else you would want them to know or you would advise them of?
Good question. I wanted to say something that I left out, particularly for those who are thinking about anthologies, because I run into a lot of women that are really gung-ho about this anthology thing. They're like, oh, you know, they see something big there, which it can be. But the one thing I would say is know who you're interviewing to work on your project with. Know the people that's going to be in your book. You want to look for the right type of individuals that are going to be in your anthology. So that was something that I forgot to say. You want to know, are they the right type of individuals? Are they going to be good during the marketing purposes of this, of your vision? You know, are they able to speak in front of a camera or for the topic that you're going for in your book? Will they be that individual that can carry that conversation without you being there on a stage, within a stage presence? So you want to know who you're working with on anthologies. That's something that I think a lot of people lose focus on. They think about the money from their co-authors outside of exactly what the co-authors are able to do. And as a visionary, you want to make sure that you have the right people working alongside of you. When you are working on any type of book project, while working on the book project, you should already know, what am I looking for out of this book? Because if you think that you're going to get rich off of a book, you are extremely wrong. If you do not have a platform already set up like a Oprah, a Steve Harvey, those people who already, T.D. Jakes, he just came out with the book, Don't Drop the Mic. Do you know why he became a number one bestseller? He already has a platform. T.D. Jakes is like a household name. Everyone pretty much knows who T.D. Jakes is, but he has a platform. He does other things besides write books. Yes, he has the book. He's made money off the book, I'm sure, but his money doesn't all come from just the book. It comes from different sources, different revenue sources. So I would say, know what you are doing when you go into writing this book. Have a vision for what the book is going to help you further produce. Is that going to be a brand? Are you going into a global movement? What does that look like? Like Alicia was talking about, you want to have a plan. The book is the low-hanging fruit. It's your business card for business. It's your introductory level. It's something that's going to enhance you along the way, yes. But it's not what's going to ultimately bring you all of your money. That's not going to be the major source of revenue because, like many of us, we are getting our names out there. A lot of people don't know who you are. And they won't know who you are just because you have a book. There are a million and one authors out there. Everyone is writing a book these days. But what was their vision and what was their plan prior to writing the book or during writing the book? Did they have a vision? Did they have a plan? I had a family member tell me that she wanted to write a book. I said, that's awesome. What next? What do you mean? What next? What else do you want to do besides write the book? What is your plan for the book? The book is your introduction card. What do you want to become? What are you trying to be, a brand? Are you building a brand? Are you building a movement? What is your theme for yourself? Who are you with this book? You're a global speaker. What are you trying to introduce to the world? Because if it's just a book, then you'll be like the million and one authors out there who have written a book and the book is sitting on their shelf or sitting in the box, or they're trying to sell books up the back of the trunk, or they're downtown Brooklyn, Flatbush, and they have their table set up trying to sell their book along with 40, 50 other authors who have the same thing going on at the table. So know, have a vision, have a plan. Know what your book is going to produce, because it's definitely not going to get you the revenue that you think you're going to get unless you already have a household name. So I will leave you with that. And I'm Sordia White, known as the amazing Amazon.
You know, I have to laugh when it comes to Sordia because, of course, I'm a little biased because she's my client, but that doesn't get you on the Publishing Secrets Clubhouse. Let me just say that. Doesn't matter. Matter of fact, that can get you excluded. So you got to be good for me to include you. But I'm going to say this. I love hearing her talk because it's certain things she says. It's like, I hear me. So I'm like, wow. And, you know, you always love in business when you're working with clients, but they listen. Because, you know, you can have some clients and most of us as business owners knows, especially when you first started, you told them everything and they just didn't do it. But I can say for Saudi, if you tell her anything, she's going to do it. She will write the manual and she'll come back before you expect it. And so when I hear her say low hanging fruit, when I hear her advising people, and what else do you have? I'm like, she listened and she got it. That part about it being your business card, she got it. So I love to hear myself through my client's voice. It just makes me happy. But that's the whole point of being an author. In the process, you're supposed to work with people that inform you so you can make better informed decisions and you understand exactly what you're supposed to be doing. So I love that. I love everything you told us, Sordia. I'm going to bring you back in a moment because I do want you to tell us, you know, a little bit more about the global movement. We know it's generational survivors. We heard about empowering people globally, but I think before we end this episode, you would really be doing them a disservice if you didn't tell them some of the other things you're doing and how you really have broadened that generational survivors platform, from courses to speaking panels to all of that. Because I know it's a lot of people that have written a book and they want to do some of the amazing things you do, but some of them may not be thinking about that, and the other people, they really want to do it, but they don't know how to do it. So I want to bring you back shortly as we're closing just to tell us that. But I see someone else in the house. She's one of Fruition Publishing's clients. I do like to brag on her, and I'll do it in front of her face this time. But yes, Maria Roberts, best-selling author, My Downward Spiral to Freedom. I love the things she would do, and I will to ever and ever amen say that when she first launched her book, there are so many things that she did that I was just like, okay, she's another one that listened, but she did them very well. And she did them in a way that she had a success that a lot of new authors really don't. And this is her first book. And there's some things, and this is why I say about partnership, because when you're creating the book and you're launching a book, you know, there's a pre-sale date you have. And I love when Sordia brought up the point about T.D. Jakes. As well known as T.D. Jakes is, you should know that for every book he comes out with, T.D. Jakes is pre-selling, accepting pre-orders and marketing on average 6 to 12 months before that book is released. He's on every media. Yeah, we know he's T.D. Jakes, but he's on every media circuit. He's on everything promoting that book. He is not going to launch it. He could write it, have that baby ready for print, And with his massive email list and community, he could have that thing sold and have thousands of copies sold probably in the first 24 to 48 hours, but he doesn't. So it takes time. Bring me back to Maria. You know, if you have a reputable publisher, once everything is in the system, we've seen that proof copy, we've analyzed it, make sure there's no errors, formatting is great, the book cover looks great, then there's that time where, you know, based on what we discussed, you're ready for that thing to hit the market and people to order. Well, when you have it in the system the right way, there is a pre-order link. Not talking about what's on your website. I mean, they can actually go to some of these online places and see that the book is available by a certain date. They can place their order, and on that date it is available, it will be shipped to them. And that's how a lot of people, especially if they're doing that aggressive marketing and have wide email lists, huge author platform, that's how they can reach names like the New York Times bestseller or other highly recognized bestseller list. Of course, that takes a massive amount of people, massive amount of marketing, massive amount of advertising. Some new authors, most new authors, don't have the bandwidth and don't want to do that. But one thing they should be doing is what Maria did. Maria got in front of her publisher. So listen to this for anyone that's hearing this or hearing this at a later point. Take note of this. She knew what date we were offering it to be available. She knew an estimate around what time that pre-order link would be up. And if they looked up the book, if she's marketing it on social media, we're marketing it on social media, they can go to Amazon, they can go to these other sites and pre-order the book. So what she had already done, she had gotten her pre-order list together. She got her supporters together. Tip number one, if you're writing a book, and it's not always just your friends and family, but you want your hit list. You want to have a minimum of 50 people or more that, but the minimum is 50, that you know if I ask them to buy this book, they would, that I can contact to buy this book when it's available. Get their email, get their phone number, have your hit list, communicate with your hit list, letting them know what's coming, letting them know this. Maria did that effortlessly. We saw her with her proof copy. We saw her talking before the proof copy was available, giving them snippets, talking about her journey, talking about, you know, some of, you know, some things she didn't want to be transparent on, but the reason why, because people buy from who? People they like, know, and trust. So she did that, but she got in front of us, which was very smart. Another tip you want to learn from her example. What she did when she knew that link was about to be available and she had that proof copy showing them, she already had the link on her website. So people could go right there and place their pre-order. Authors, you need a website or at least a one page. If you don't know what I'm talking about, go to fruitionpublishing.com, go to that first page, go at the bottom, send us a message, contact us if you're struggling with that. But no, you need at least a one page. If you don't have a website, you need at least a one page where it shows information about that book that's coming and you have somewhere to get their email address. The finances of your business, of that book, your financial stream is tied to that email address and the communications and things you'll do with them. So Maria did that. Maria had a place for them to go to give them her email address, the list that she had the email address from, as she continued to build that funnel. When it was time, she had them pre-order from her. Why? Because you make more money offline than online. She doesn't want to give Amazon her money unless you want to go to Amazon and pay for the book. But if you're willing to buy it from her, she's going to keep more profits in her pocket. And because she's going to do an autographed copy for you, if you select that option, then guess what? She gets even more money because you charge more money for the autographed copies. So this is what we call understanding your real estate and being smart about it. She got those pre-orders and had you come to her website first. And what does that mean? Well, it's always cheaper for her to order her books than you. So she's using those funding from pre-order sales to order those book copies. Gone are the days where you're going to sit up there and just order hundreds and thousands of boxes of books, hoping that someone's going to buy them from you. No, You build that audience, you talk to that audience, you nurture that audience, you have their contact information, you have the infrastructure built that when it's time for pre-order, you've already been talking to these people and you're bringing them to you. You have a link where they can click on now and pay you for that book. You have the description of when they can expect that book, and then you go ahead and fulfill those orders. She did that well. I remember she had over 100 people that were committed to buy that book, and 85 finalized with her that first point. And then she continued on with different marketing tactics and things. And last time I counted, she was on her second box of books. She sold those out. She sold out the first. And then on top of that, she's been quoted at different places. As a matter of fact, you can see if you look up My Downward Spiral to Freedom, you can actually see different bookstores that physically have the book in there. So she did an amazing job of that. And that's just some of the tips of when you're being not only with a reputable publisher, but you're teachable and you're willing to do the work. This doesn't happen by osmosis. And this doesn't happen if you're just one and done and you don't want to do anything. It's a business and you have to continue to work. But Saudia, I want to bring you back up. I want you to tell them, what are you doing? What this generational survivors, what are you as the founder? What are you doing? What things have you offered since you've had that book published? And what's next?
All right. Well, we know that generational survivors, Survivors of a Generation Unheard, the book is just that. It's the book, right? It's not leading me to where I am today. So as the visionary and founder, I saw that I wanted to expound on what I was doing. As a generational survivor, our goal is definitely to provide more resources and also lobby for change in laws. I spoke about that in the beginning for the victims turned survivors. As to what I'm doing now, I have created different trauma-based courses. I am a mental wellness advocate. I'm a certified trauma instructor, as well as a life trainer. I have incorporated some of my personal experiences with my coursework and come up with just a whole overview of what trauma looks like and how to heal from it. Yeah. I've had a lot of different clients come in and they really enjoyed, I call it the not the boot camp, but the work camp. I have a lot of fun doing that. Not only am I instructing courses and creating courses, but I also hold a lot of different female groups with women who have gone through trauma and they're trying to overcome it. So that's one of my passions, being a peer support specialist to these women. I had to go through a class to become a certified peer support specialist. With that work, I'm also a sexual assault prevention and mental wellness advocate. And that's just expounding on what I do as the visionary and founder of Generational Survivor. So it all kinds of ties in. So that's what Alicia is trying to tell you all, is that when you have a vision, you want to expound upon that. So your book, that's great, but you have other things that you bring in. Like that T.D. Jakes. You see how T.D. Jakes is a speaker, he's a pastor, he's a
philanthropist,
an author,
nonprofit.
I serve on a board as a nonprofit executive director, corporate giving director. So for Crusading Outreach Ministries, I'm a comic book author. I'm a magazine writer, so I have a lot of things going on behind the scene, not to mention that I am building a new initiative, which I'm not going to speak about right now because that's in the works, so I can't really speak about that, but there are so many different things that, and so many different hats that I wear behind the scenes. I kind of forget how many hats that I wear on a daily basis. It's a lot, but please don't. Check out my book, Survivors of a Generation Unheard, Stories of Generational Survivors. I dedicated this to my mother, Renee Steatley, who she is deceased, And my mother has a shelter built in her name. It's the Renee Steatley Family Residence Shelter, which is located in New York. A lot of the proceeds from the book that I, when I receive proceeds from the book, they go towards my mother's shelter. So I definitely would love that support. Renee Steatley holds a lot of presidents in New York. That's where I'm from. I'm also the author of Amazing Amazon. I want you to check her out. She has a new book coming out. That's my comic book. It's an empowerment comic book. So,
which actually is debuting for a nonprofit youth program this summer.
Yes. Yeah. I forgot about that.
That's okay. That's okay. We probably left off about 15 things.
Board. Look, serving on the board with the city, Hampton City Schools.
So it's grant funded. So that just shows you all the options of what you can do. But Saudia, where do they follow you? Your website information and all of that.
Okay, so you can follow Generational Survivors and be a part of the movement. We need strong women, men. We need your voices to be heard at Generational, GENERATIONAL, Survivors with the S at the end, .com, and Amazing Amazon, and that's Amazing with a E, AMAZINE, Amazon, AMAZON.com. It's a really uplifting comic book. I want you all to follow those two websites. Join the movement.
Yeah.
Our voices are heard in numbers, and we need to lobby where I'm organizing a structural march after COVID has died down a lot. We want to lobby for change. There has to be change in the laws. And that's something that we're working on now. So we need more women, more men to join the movement. So I'm just thankful for Alicia's platform. I thank you, Alicia, for the work that you do with me behind the scenes. We have a lot going on. So.
Yeah, she tires me. She tires me, and I in turn tire her, but it's all right. We have movement.
They just don't know. People don't understand.
They don't.
You may not hear or see me doing a lot. I mean, I know I do a lot of posting, uplifting sometimes on Facebook. You can follow me on Facebook as well, Saudia White, or Generational Survivors, or both. I have some private Facebook groups that you're welcome to join once you follow me. So that's my first and last name, Saudia White, on Clubhouse. Please follow me on Clubhouse or follow me on Instagram, Amazing Amazon. Look me up that way, or Generational Survivors, and I will follow you back.
And I'm just going to put in a selfless plug there. If you went to fruitionpublishing.com, you'll see her as well as Maria that I mentioned, Maria Roberts, as one of the five authors that published in the pandemic with us. So you'll have their stories. And as always, we always make it where you can click on those links and you go directly to them. So you get to learn more about them, not just the book, but you learn more about them and have links to go back to their websites. And same thing she said, if you go to amazingamazon.com, amazing with the E, not a G on the end, amazingamazon.com. You can follow her for that initiative. You can also go to generationalsurvivors.com and learn more about that initiative as well. And of course, those two websites have all her social media links that are associated with that brand. So you can continue to follow her there as well. And same thing with me. It's thejoyguru.net has all my social media links for publishing as well. And then you go to fruitionpublishing.com, has all of our social media links, including the link to Clubhouse. Actually, we did go ahead and add to my thejoyguru.net at the bottom. There's the icon now added for Clubhouse, along with our other social media that will take you right to Publishing Secrets so that you're able to follow the club and be alerted of our upcoming events. If you join my email list from thejoyguru.net, we will send you special recordings. We will give you other updates about stuff in publishing and platforms, speaking things I'm at that would be great for you to be a part of. And of course, if you're a client already with us, or you need to learn how to be a client, you can go to those websites. But if you're a client with us, as I get different media pitches, because I'm very interesting, you're just not having a book, but you're actually being able to brand yourself and get your message out there, we send pitch opportunities as they fit your particular brand. Saudi will know because I just threw one at her last night. So especially if you come with us, you're going to work. But thank you for tuning into this episode of Publishing Secrets. We are committed to be here every Wednesday at 8:30 p.m. And as I told you in other episodes, if you follow me on social media, you can even tell me things you want to know more about, because we want to give you those publishing and media secrets for your success as authors and for your success, because of course, being an author is a business. So we want you to secure your author platform and secure the bag. So thank you for joining us tonight. This ends this episode.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Entrepreneur's Lounge, where we expose the myths of entrepreneurship and release the weight of it all. Real people, real issues, and real talk with expert solutions. Make sure you stay tuned to our Facebook page and thejoyguru.net for show updates, announcements, and to learn how you can be a guest on our show.